your next great vacation might be something you've never even considered. A private yacht in a beautiful location just for you and your closest friends and family. Explore the beaches of the Virgin Islands, the ancient shores of Greece, or the tropical paradise of Tahiti. This is not a cruise. This is a yacht charter vacation with The Moorings. And it's easier than you think. With hundreds of award-winning yachts to choose from, located in over 20 beautiful sailing destinations, the world is in your hands. Whether you're an experienced boater or looking for a more genuine once-in-a-lifetime vacation, The Moorings can make your dream a reality. Call us today and start your journey to your next great escape. Your private yacht awaits at moorings.com.
Hello and welcome to Useful Idiots. I'm Katie Halper.
I'm Aaron Mate. Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us for another episode. Our website is usefulidiotspodcast.com. Go there, support the show, keep us going, and get bonus content.
What's not to love?
Yes, including this week's Thursday Throwdown, where we make fun of CNN being offended, triggered at the fact that Palestinian Americans who won delegates as uncommitted representatives wanted to speak at the convention to support a ceasefire. And CNN was offended by this audacious request. So we go over that and a whole lot more.
Yeah, really, really unbelievable to CNN. The nerve, according to CNN. Well, should we do the four basic food groups?
Let's do it. For Democrats suck, let's turn to the Biden administration and what they're doing to bring a ceasefire to the Israeli assault on Gaza. Now, the Biden administration claims that it wants a ceasefire. Anthony Blinken's been shuttling back and forth to the Middle East. It's coming any day now. But meanwhile, the Biden administration will not stop the thing that is continuing to fuel Israel's assault, which is sending Israel weapons. So while the Biden administration claims that it's working for a ceasefire, they continue to send Israel weapons. And this is a headline from the Jerusalem Post. U.S. sends 500th aircraft to Israel as airlifts of weapons equipment continue. And what do we see inside this article announcing this 500th aircraft shipment of weaponry to Israel? It's Israel thanking the U.S. and acknowledging this. Armored vehicles, munitions, ammunition, personal protection gear, and medical equipment are crucial for sustaining the IDF's operational capabilities during the ongoing war. So while the Biden administration claims that it's doing all it can to achieve a ceasefire, the Israeli military says that the U.S. weapons deliveries are crucial for not having a ceasefire, but for continuing its assault on Gaza. So that's what the U.S. is doing in real life. And meanwhile, it's also just to make sure that Israel has enough weapons going long into the future. It also recently announced this, the latest U.S. weapons package to Israel, which is $20 billion, includes $18 billion for aircraft and related equipment. So sending its 500th military shipment to Israel since October 7th, and also announcing a package of $20 billion to rearm Israel long into the future. That's what the Biden administration is doing. And it's just such an outrage, all the more of it, because we just had the Democratic National Convention where on stage you had people like AOC and Kamala Harris pretending that the U.S. is pushing for a ceasefire. And luckily for them, corporate media is totally playing along. So here, for example, is CNN's Karen Finney talking about how the Biden administration is doing both. It's pro-Palestinian, but also at the same time, there's no contradiction with also being pro-Israel.
Now, we were in that room when she gave that speech, and you could hear at different points of her saying that there were reactions from the crowd. You couldn't quite understand what they were saying, but it seemed pretty clear that they were waiting for her to get to the other part of the Israel alliance. What did you make of her total discussion?
I thought she did it beautifully because she did something that progressives have actually, I think, failed to do, which is it's a false choice to say that you can't be pro the Israeli people and pro the Palestinian people. We've let ourselves be caught up in sort of this argument without saying, no, it's about the people. We're trying to make sure that the Israeli people live in safety and security, and that the Palestinian people have an opportunity to do the same thing and realize their own, country. And so I thought she did that quite deftly. And you could hear in the room, I mean, I was with a group of people, a couple of them were kind of, is she going to say it? Is she going to keep saying, hold on, she's going to, you know, and then she did. And there was just real joy and appreciation for the fact that she acknowledged both sides of what has been obviously a very tortured, difficult conflict.
Tara, this.
Yeah. Okay. So both sides, a genocide, you know, Kamala Harris is doing it all. She's pro-Palestinian rights, but she's also pro-Israeli security. And no, it's not a false choice. It's a very real choice. Israel's been committing mass murder in the name of defending itself. So you can't say you support Israel's right to defend itself as Kamala Harris did, while also saying that you care about Palestinian suffering, because Israel's so-called right to defend itself is what's causing Palestinian suffering. And people want to pretend as if you can have it both ways, but you can't. And I'm sorry, it's not going to mollify all the people who are outraged about the Biden administration's stance. And I don't know, maybe the Kamala Harris campaign has decided that they don't need Michigan, where there's a sizable Arab American and Muslim American population. Maybe they can win it without Michigan. Maybe that's the calculus, but you can't go around pretending as if they've satisfied the people who are upset about the Biden administration's unfettered support for Israel, because it's just not going to fly.
Yeah, they're like trying to both sides of genocide, basically.
Yeah, I mean, literally in that clip, she's saying both sides have suffered. And, you know, Joe Biden at the convention said, you know, there's suffering on both sides.
And Harris said that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, recently in one of the Israeli hostages who was freed was like seen in a video partying in a bikini with like a bunch of people. Meanwhile, you know, a few miles away, Israel's slaughtering people in a death camp. And by the way, that Israeli hostage, her boyfriend still being held in captivity. So, I mean, that's like the contrast. People are partying in Israel and people are being slaughtered in Gaza. So there's no two sides there.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. The bar is so low, like literally just mentioning Palestinians is supposed to get Harris credit.
So that, as always, is Democrats Suck.
All right. Well, for Republicans Suck, let's go to an interesting, a fascinating interview that Dr. Phil did with Donald Trump. And Donald Trump made some really interesting claims.
I look at California. I gave a speech. I had a crowd so big. I said, there's no way I could lose California. But automatically, they mark it down if you're a Republican as a loss. That you lose by 5 million votes. I said, 5 million votes. I guarantee if Jesus came down and was the vote counter, I would win California, okay? In other words, if we had an honest vote counter, a really honest vote counter, I'd do great with the Hispanics, great. I mean, at a level that no Republican's ever done. But if we had an honest vote counter, I would win California.
You think so?
Oh, I think so. I do. I see it. I go around California. They have Trump signs all over the place. It's a very dishonest. Everything is mail-in. They send out 38 million ballots. I think it is around 36, 38 million ballots. They send them.
I mean, you've heard of what would Jesus do? It turns out Jesus would be a vote counter. And he would hand it to Trump.
How would Jesus count?
How would Jesus count? H-W-J-C. Yeah.
You think if Jesus did come down, he'd have higher priorities than counting the votes in a California presidential race. But apparently, according to Trump, actually, that would be among Jesus' top priorities is to correct the injustice of Donald Trump losing even California, one of the most liberal states in the country.
Right. I mean, I kind of feel like if I were a religious Christian, I'd be offended by this, by turning Jesus into a vote counter. Not that there's anything wrong with being a vote counter, but it seems like, as you said, Aaron, he would have bigger priorities.
Well, no one probably in history has gotten more of a pass for pretending to be religious than Donald Trump, who, like, you know, since running for president as a Republican, has all of a sudden found Jesus. And even though, like, there are all these clips of him being asked, like, hey, like, what's your favorite passage in the Bible? And he goes, like, all of them. I just love the whole thing.
Right.
That's enough for evangelicals to believe that he's one of them. So, you know, I mean, this goes to both parties too. I mean, every president pretends that they're like devout Christians. Barack Obama pretended to be a devout Christian, that like he opposed abortion and, or he opposed gay marriage until it was politically palatable to drop that. So everyone does that. But I think Trump's taking it to a new level.
Right. And I think the evangelicals don't care because he delivers their social program. They couldn't care less. Yeah,
he certainly does. Although now he's trying to walk away from that. Now, I mean, after realizing that his abortion stance is not helping him, is actually threatening to tank his election prospects. Now he's talking about respecting women's reproductive rights, which is a new thing for him because he's bragged so much about how he was the one who got Roe versus Wade overturned.
Right. And just lied so blatantly. That was so insane. Lied so blatantly about how every legal scholar thinks that overturning Roe v. Wade is a good thing to do. Just absolutely insane. I mean, I know he lies all the time, but sometimes they're so blatant that they even stand out for him.
And if, let's say, Jesus did count the votes in California, if Jesus actually confirmed that Trump lost, would Trump target Jesus he targeted the vote counters in Georgia and other states that didn't go his way? He probably would.
That's a really good question. Well, also, I was thinking, you know, even if Trump weren't winning, even if Trump lost, which I'm sure he would do in California, you know, Jesus turned water into wine. So maybe Jesus could turn a Harris victory into a Trump victory.
There we go.
There we go. There we go.
Okay, for isn't that weird? Have you heard of the Kentucky meat shower?
I have not.
Well,
but I would like to hear about it.
Well, let's hear about it.
Kentucky Town is embracing its very unusual history. The Bath County History Museum opened an exhibit to commemorate what is known as the meat shower. Legend has it, in March of 1876, a woman was outside with her grandson when chunks of red meat started falling from the sky. A purported piece of that meat is preserved by Transylvania University. Researchers have their own theories on what it is and how it got there.
One includes there's a weather pattern where winds will pick up small fish and frogs, and I think it's called an upspout, and then they lay them down in another place. For me, the vulture vomit theory is the only one that feels possible.
Okay. Well, DNA testing on the sample has been inconclusive, so the exact cause of the meat shower remains a mystery.
Did he say vulture vomit theory?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Interesting. So he's endorsing the vulture vomit theory.
Yeah.
All right.
I think it was a PSA by God for veganism, you know.
Right.
He was, you know, he or she, God, was just raining down meat chunks to say, like, you know, look at this, is disgusting. I myself, God, I'm puking up the meat because it's so bad for you. So everyone should be a vegan. That's my theory on the Kentucky meat shower.
All right. Well, listeners and viewers, let us know, vulture vomit or vegan endorsement. All right. Well, for Isn't That Terrible, let's take a look at a really fascinating story. It comes from New Zealand. And I'm just going to quote the protagonist of the story and let people know what happened to her. So this woman, Alice Cowdery, was walking her dog Sadie at a beach in New Plymouth. So what makes this especially terrible is that before this story happens, which you're about to hear about, she had already encountered that same morning two dead goats on the beach, okay, a few days before this story happens. I'd sort of been thinking about how odd that was and how it made me feel a little bit uneasy. I had, when I first got out of the car, been thinking about bodies, which is totally bizarre. And then what happens? Okay, this woman sees what she thinks is a body. I just sort of froze and felt sick. I could see it was definitely the shape of a torso face down, and I could tell it was a woman's figure. Okay, so let's take a look at this image. It is indeed a scary image. It's conveniently covered up. The breasts are covered up with sand. I have a feeling that was done afterwards. But Aaron, guess what this was? This seeming corpse. This apparent corpse.
Well, I already saw the headline, so, you know, I'd spoil the surprise, but...
All right.
I mean, this is why maybe we need a ban on sex dolls.
Right. It's a realistic looking sex doll. Yeah.
Because it can lead to very confusing mishaps like this.
Right. You know? I mean, she must have been really relieved, though, because she called the cops. And then I think what was probably weird for her is that the cops came, and she says, and then I sort of saw one of the cops nudge it with his foot, and I thought, he's not going to nudge it if it's a body. And then he flipped it over.
Hmm. Well, listen, respect to the sex doll manufacturers for
being for so realism. Realistic.
I mean, you know, they should win an award. If there are sex doll awards, I haven't followed the sex doll community very closely, but if there are awards for best sex doll, we got a winner right there.
Exactly. Yeah. Indeed. So those are your four basic food groups. We are so excited to be bringing you today an interview with Daniela Bono, who is a lawmaker, member of parliament with La France Insoumise party, that's France Unbowed, and the New Popular Front. And she's going to talk about something that's happening in France right now, which many, including Danielle, have called a coup. Thank you so much for joining us, Daniela Bono.
Thank you for having me.
People are calling what's happening right now in France a coup or an attempted coup. Before we get into why that is, and you are one of those people, can you set up what happened in the July elections that got us to the point we're at right now?
Yes, those have been very hectic weeks. What happened is that we've been campaigning for the past almost year now for the European elections. That happened early June, actually. Emmanuel Macron's party was beaten at those elections. The far right won the election. They did win this same election 5 years ago. So it was not a surprise, but they had big results. And during the campaign, they said that if they were to win, Macron should call a snap election, which he did. He didn't do this when we had this huge movement against the pension reform, and that people were saying that there's a problem with the National Assembly because the people want something and the National Assembly is not ready to vote for it. He could have done it then, but he did it only at the request, literally at the request of the far right. He was making a bet and trying to either let the far right win because they were expected to win, having won the previous election, or trying to regain some majority, so for some wide of margin at the National Assembly, because the fear of the far right, he thought, would have put him as the best way to beat the far right. But this backfired for him because, first of all, people were quite shocked that he would agree with the far right and give them what was supposed to be their expected victory. And it triggered something very deep within the people because the far right in France and the National Rally, as they call them, is an actual, you know, fascist party. They campaign targeting migrant people, Muslim people, people from immigrant background, saying that they would forbid people from immigrant background to get position in the states and things like that. Like, you know, the far right always targeting people of color and stuff like that. And actually, people actually feared for their lives, for their livelihood, for the future of their kids. So what we managed to do during that time is to mobilize millions of people. What the bet that Macron did in June was also that we couldn't unite. You know, we had built this coalition back in 2022 called NUPES. We did that, the France Insoumise, because we had a great result at the presidential election, and we said, okay, let's get together, and we could maybe win the legislative election. We didn't, but we did a great result. For 2 years, we built this alliance, but the Socialist Party and the Green decided to separate from the coalition during the European election, because this is an election that they bet they would get a bigger result, and that will give them more influence within our coalition. And that's the reason why Macron was able to do that, to do that snap election, because he thought that since we had been separated during the European election, we were weakened. The left was weakened and we couldn't get back together. But we did. We managed to rebuild our coalition. And I think those two elements, the fact that people really feared that the far right could win, all the polls were saying they were like over, 27, I think, polls that said they would win. And the fact that we managed to rebuild our coalition, the left coalition, help mobilize millions of people, and we actually won the election.
And so now talk us through what happened next with Macron refusing to allow your party to have a prime minister.
Yeah, so we did win the election. That's very important. I repeat that because we're living in, I think Macron and his supporters are living in an alternative reality, an alternate reality where they keep saying nobody won the election. I think we started laughing when they started do that, but it's very what I think Trump said, like it's some alternative truth and the idea that, you know, they don't accept the results of, you know, the election, which is very undemocratic, and it's a very serious sign of autocratic tendencies. But so there's this big narrative that the media also is repeating, nobody won the election, which is not true. What is true is that we didn't get an absolute majority at the National Assembly. But that doesn't negate the fact that we came first, which normally would mean that the president should call the candidate from our coalition as prime minister. And then this prime minister is tasked to build a government, to have a government, and then to come before the National Assembly and try to build majorities on bills. That's their job. The person that is selected by the coalition or party that came first is tasked with that. So Macron decided, in a way, to not follow what is the rules in any democratic regime. Actually, that's what is happening in Germany, in Italy, in Spain, everywhere. And he decided in a way to play both referee, coach, and even be a player, because he is acting as if he was the leader of his party, which he's not. He's not. He's the president. And he just decided not to obey any of the rules and to make his own government, and said, since you don't have an absolute majority, which it means that you're going to be blocked by the assembly, and the other party will not, you know, vote for your government. So I'm going to make my own government, or the government I think will be able to pass bills and stuff like that. So he's totally overstepping his constitutional role. So we decided to tell him that since he didn't want to call Lucie Castet, who is she's the candidate we decided that should be prime minister, we will vote no confidence to any government it will call, because this government will be illegitimate. We're calling for demonstration because we think that the people should get a say. They said through the polls that they wanted a new Nouveau Front Populaire government. And they are very angry. A lot of people are just like saying, so what is happening? It's very serious, because it means like you're telling the people that democracy doesn't work. Whether you go vote or not, it doesn't change anything. And it could really, we had during this election a huge turnout at the polls, which is unprecedented. It hasn't happened for since years and decades to have such a big turnout. And we had to go and convince people, you know, knocking doors and telling that, yes, we can do this. We have to defeat the far right, but we can also implement this program that will change your lives. So now we can't just tell them, it's okay, let Macron do whatever he wants. So we decided to call them to get onto the street and demonstrate. And that's what's going to happen on September the 7th. Actually, it's the youth organization who called for this, and we supported their call. And we have decided, as La France Insoumise, to launch, it's like an impeachment procedure, because Macron overstepped his role. And actually, he is the problem in this. He is the one who decided to snap election. He didn't have to, and now he doesn't want to recognize the results of those elections. So that's actually the key to the crisis that is happening. He is the obstacle for the ruling. I mean the functioning of the institution. So he got to be removed from power. So that's why we decided to launch this impeachment procedure.
When Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone, he already had 3 missed calls from Chuck Norris.
We all know the man, the myth, and the legend of Chuck Norris. But did you know that in his 80s, he's still alive and kicking butt? Either that, or death is too afraid to tell him the news. Chuck wants to share with you what gives him so much energy to work out, stay active, and keep up with his grandkids. He did this just by making one change. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s.
And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/useful for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/useful.
This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
For some, the sea is not a place. It is a calling, a home away from home. If you find yourself drawn to the water, we can take you there. Imagine you, your friends, and family on a private yacht in the most beautiful places in the world, from the Bahamas or the Virgin Islands to Greece, Italy, Tahiti, and beyond. This is a yacht charter vacation with the Moorings, and it's easier than you think. Inquire today. Your next great vacation begins at moorings.com. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
One of the arguments I've heard from Macron and his supporters is that, all right, like, yes, the left had this victory, but people in France weren't really voting for the left in the election. They were just voting against Le Pen and the far right. So therefore, I'm not obligated to let the left take over and be in power. qu'est-ce que c'est votre réponse à cet argument?
So, of course, beating the far right was a big impulse for people to go to vote. And it means something. I mean, whether if you think that they didn't vote for anything but beating the far right, they decided we were the one who could do that. And they voted for us. They could have said, like what happened actually in 2017 and 2022 during the presidential election, Macron was elected when he passed the first round. He was facing Marine Le Pen from the far right, and people voted, not because, and they actually said it, because there were only two candidates, and millions of people, left people, people on the left, actually said, we're going to vote to defeat Marine Le Pen because we are anti-fascists and we will always oppose the far right. So he was elected and he actually recognized this during his speeches after his victory in 2017 and 2022. He said, okay, I feel like I have a duty to the people who voted for us to oppose the far right. So it was part of his mandate, actually. And nobody said that, you know, he didn't win and he was illegitimate. The problem is that during the past 7 years now, he's done the contrary of opposing the far right. He actually helped them get more MPs. In 2017, there were like 8 of them during the previous legislative session. The prize fiery, they were 8 of them. They got to 88, and in 2022, and now they are over 100. The past 7 years, he actually renegated on the mandate the people gave him to oppose the far right. So there's no wonder that people actually decided to vote for us rather than his people to oppose the far right. So I think it's, first of all, it's an actual mandate they gave us. And we are actually the only one who are willing to oppose the far right, because we saw they voted to oppose social measures, and they voted one of the worst anti-immigration law. That was one of the last bills that was passed at the National Assembly back in January, where they voted a bill that contained part of the far right programs. So the second thing I would say is that our mandate was not only to oppose the far right. We had a program, and I think it's very disrespectful to the people, to the voters, to believe that they would, you know, not actually be serious about what they vote for. They voted for us because our platform was is to implement changes, is to raise the minimum wage, is to rebuild the social services, is about funding healthcare, refunding healthcare and the education and actually fund environmental policy and build environmental policy and face climate change and, you know, and actually providing shelter and legal, you know, papers to migrant people and stuff like that. And people do believe that that's the way it should, you know, we should govern a country like France. We do have those two mandates, and they are legitimate and they are valid, and the voters should be respected, and Macron should respect what the people said in the polls, which is not just one thing, but two very important things.
These neoliberals like Macron, and this is like universal, this happens in the US too, like they'll take the left's votes when they're running against the far right. They'll happily take the left's votes. But then when the left wins, they'll say, no, we can't let them win. Same thing happened to Bernie Sanders. Like, Bernie Sanders campaigns for Democrats. But when Bernie Sanders has a chance to win, the Democrats campaign against him. And there are some who even would prefer Donald Trump over Bernie Sanders. You know, it's like these neoliberals are not very good allies when it comes to voting.
What happened during the election, during the second round of the election, is that because they kept, over the past 7 years, they've been demonizing us, La France Insoumise, saying we were, you know, anti-Semite, we were against police, you know, against law and order and stuff like that. So, and they kept, and they started saying that we were worse than the far right. And so what happened, during the second round of the legislative election is that less than 50% of Macron voters actually opposed the far right. When you had Nouveau Front Populaire candidates against the far right, in less than 50% of those settings, they voted to oppose the far right, which means that the people who actually beat the far right are the people from the left, because they've been, you know, all their propaganda and saying that, oh, we are the two extremes, and saying that we are worse than the far right, meant that some people were convinced, or some people actually do prefer the far right to the left, and that's how so many far right MPs got elected, and they would have less MP if everybody had behaved like France Insoumise voters and NFP voters and had opposed the far right in the polls. And we did vote, some of people actually voted for the Macron candidates or, you know, right-wing parties candidates. And they did that because they are anti-fascist and we'll keep doing that. But you see that they are the one actually that help the far right.
And right now, recently, Macron has been meeting with Le Pen, not with, for example, Mélenchon, right? So he's kind of right now collaborating with the far right as we speak.
Yeah, actually, he met with, he calls for, he asked to meet everyone for a first round of discussions. And then he said, I'm not going to choose Lucie Castet. But I want to talk with you about the people I want to pick. But we decided not to go. And so he will meet with the other ones. He's been trying, you know, to divide our coalition, saying that I can talk with the Socialist Party, with the Greens and the Communist Party, but not with La France Insoumise. But everybody stood, you know, together and said, we won't go, because the only discussion we should have is our government. And that you have to call Lucie Castet, who is our candidate. So, but what happened is what is interesting is that the way the far right behaved and Marine Le Pen, they actually took part in the attempt to say that we couldn't have a government because they will oppose us, and they agreed with Macron. And said that he should not nominate our candidates. So they were like allies with Macron on that.
And can you talk about the different political ideologies and politics behind these three groups? For instance, specifically Le Pen, Macron, and Mélenchon, and Lucie Castel.
Yes, well, I think Macron is a right wing with far right tendencies. Actually, we really discovered over the past 7 years that he was supposed to be this new guy in politics, although he had been part of the previous government before he got elected president. So he was not a new guy, and he was supposed to be neither left nor right. I think his attempt to say that the left doesn't exist anymore, the right doesn't exist anymore. You just have to have willing people to implement neoliberal policies. He is a neoliberal, but with an authoritarian and, as we see now, an autocratic tendency and appealing. And from the very start, he tried to appeal to far right voters and to the far right when they were elected. And the National Assembly. So, yeah, so you got this. We've been describing the situation, the political situation in France is like it's divided between three blocks. You got the neoliberal authoritarian bloc around Macron, who has been able actually to get more people from the traditional right-wing Gaullist party to his side. You got the far right, which is, you know, they are also neoliberals. That's the reason why during the past years, they actually voted with Macron on every antisocial measures that we put forward. They voted against raising the minimum wage. They voted against any progressive social policies. Also, they had been portrayed for decades in the press as, you know, pro-labor or right, having a social side or whatever. But they showed when presented with actual social and progressive measures for working class people that they will always side with the bosses, side with the capital. So that's their core is, of course, also xenophobic and racist. And so they also supported all the anti-migrant policies pushed forward by Macron and all their Islamophobic policies and so on and so forth. So you got that bloc. And you got what we call the popular bloc, the left, and what we managed to build over the past 7 years with around Jean-Luc Mélenchon, when he got in 2017 first 18% at the national at the presidential election, and in 2022 we got 22%, and that's what enabled us to build our first coalition, and it's left, I would say. It's not that much revolutionary, actually. It's just the radical left platform, as I said, with, you know, measures like raising the minimum wage, implementing actual policy in order to face climate change, and distribute wealth, and, you know, tax the rich, implement, you know, actual fiscal equality, and make sure that the wealthy pay their fair share. You got, you know, anti-racist policies, and also welcoming migrant people and with decency, and providing them with shelter and stuff like that. So that's our platform, and our strategy within La France Insoumise has been to say we need to talk about something that we called a hidden bloc, the fourth one, which is millions of people in this country who don't go to vote anymore, because they are disgusted by politics, because they've been betrayed by so-called left government before. And I think we showed and we saw during this election, this top election, that they are the one who actually can help us win, because it's due to this increase in participation that we actually came first. So I think it really showed that our strategy over the past years at La France Insoumise was right, to say we don't have to talk and try to appeal to supposedly center-right voters. You know, that's some of our comrades in this coalition, like in the Socialist Party, think that we should target, you know, Macron-like, Macronite voters or supposedly center-right voters. I don't believe that. You got center-right, they are right-wing people. So you're never going to convince them unless you go on their position and you abandon some of your program. And so the strategy we maintain and that show tremendous results is to say we have to target, you know, the millions of people who abstain from electoral politics and convince them that we will stick to the programs and we'll never budge on this, and will, and then they will come and vote, especially young people and working class people from immigrant backgrounds and people of color. If we're really, you know, solid on issues like being anti-racist, opposing targeting Muslims, and also on issue like the war in Gaza and the genocide happening, that really also was part of our platform, recognizing the state of Palestine and pushing for economic sanctions. And I think that appealed to millions of people, and they should, and despite the attacks we got for having this position, because we stood our ground and we say we won't budge on this, millions of people were actually willing to come and vote and energized by the fact that we stood strong on that issue, especially in Gaza. So
That's what I wanted to ask you about. I was in Paris a few days after October 7th, and I remember, you know, at the time, the French government was banning protests for Palestine. Yeah. People were not allowed. So I'm curious, talk to us more about how the French government's crackdown on pro-Palestinian or anti-genocide protest, and also its just support for Israel, how that triggered, you know, outrage and how that contributed to the left's electoral victory that Macron now doesn't want to recognize.
Yeah, I think we face the same kind of repression that has been happening and is still happening in major Western countries. And Macron has aligned with NATO and with the US on that issue, and has tried to prevent the solidarity movement to actually exist, and has been targeting us, La France Insoumise. Even threatening us with judicial process against us. For instance, Mathilde Panot, who is the president of our parliamentary group, has been interrogated by the police because we've been calling for a ceasefire, which is unprecedented, that to actually summon parliament, the president of a parliamentary group for, you know, having a political position on that. So they've been, you know, accusing us of anti-Semitism. I think that's been used, the weaponization of the fight against anti-Semitism has been done to a lot of over anti-war and pro-Palestine activists and political leaders, which is very, very serious, because at the same time it's a way to try and divide the support for Palestine, but I think it also weakened the fight against anti-Semitism. We can see it every day, because there have been also anti-Semitism attacks and stuff like that. So the attempt to repress this movement actually didn't work, because millions of people around the world and in France also, despite the media propaganda that has been always, you know, silencing the Palestinian voice and even harassing the Palestinians who dared to speak up and the pro-Palestinian voice, people in France came together and demonstrated despite the ban. And we managed to build a big movement to support the Palestinian people and to call for a ceasefire and to pressure Macron. So much so that during the European election, we had the candidate Rima Hassan, who is a Palestinian refugee in France, who got elected at the European Parliament. She's now one of the most harassed and attacked women in the internet and in the political scene in France. But it was also her being a candidate was also a message to millions of people, and that's what helped also us get a good result at the European election. And I also think it's the dynamics of the European election, because we built the campaign on, you know, social issues, also environmental issues, but also the issue of Palestine. And we decided to say it is a European question. It is Europe who created this situation. So it's not something, you know, outside of the debate of the European election. I think we have a responsibility. We are the biggest economic partner to Israel. And so if we implement sanctions, it will have an effect on pressuring the government to stop genocide. So we have a responsibility. And despite, you know, and even with our partners in the coalition, the Socialist Party, the Greens, they were not convinced about that. But we showed that it was a legitimate platform, and we got Rima Hassan elected, she's the first French European MP from Palestine being elected, which is a huge victory.
And you yourself have the honor of being smeared. You made some comments about Hamas that got a minister to call for a probe into you and a criminal investigation. Can you talk about what those comments were and what the response was?
And to hear the rest of the interview, please go to usefulidiotspodcast.com.
And again, very grateful to Danielle Obono, a member of the French Parliament, for speaking to us. This was a break for us. We usually cover what's happening in Israel-Palestine and a little bit of Ukraine, too. That's the other major global disaster being fueled by the U.S. But it's nice to hear what's happening in France and some lessons for all of us progressives on, you know, the struggles we face in trying to organize and trying to build coalitions with people like Emmanuel Macron, who will turn around and sell you out the moment you actually are within striking distance of taking power.
And as we see again, neoliberals prefer fascists to leftists.
Rinse and repeat.
Yep.
I wish my French was better so I could say that in French, but I just, you know, I'm really slipping.
Yeah. I did like the way you asked her in French. What do you think? What is your response to that question? Your response to that? Yeah, that was good.
You know, I used the wrong form. I used casual. The two instead of the vous, which, you know, of course, is a rookie mistake. I'm sorry.
But then you corrected yourself.
I did.
But she is a leftist and, you know, socialist, and I think maybe she'd appreciate that. That familiarity, you know, she doesn't want you to think of her as an out of touch aristocrat.
Well, fair enough. Listen, it's very, it's great to meet. It's great to see leftists having political success.
Tampered down by a neoliberal coup. Yeah.
If only we had such people here in the U.S. They're hard to find. They're hard to find. Yeah. All right. Our website is usefulidiotspodcast.com. Go there, support the show, get bonus content. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks so much for listening to and watching Useful Idiots. For extended episodes, bonus content, and our weekly Thursday Throwdown episode, please subscribe at usefulidiotspodcast.com. Support the show for free by subscribing on YouTube, Rumble, and wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like the podcast, don't forget to rate and review. You can also follow us on Twitter at Useful Idiot Pod. Thanks for supporting independent media. We'll see you next time.